Get ready for a week-long celebration of music, community, and fabulous fun with Joy Radiothon 2024. Joy has the largest collection of rainbow podcast content in the world, and you can help keep us out loud and proud by donating during Joy Radiothon 2024. Just go to joy.org.au/radiothon. Mark it in your calendars because Joy Radiothon returns June 1st to 7th. And remember, we all flourish with joy. Get your motor
running. Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Revving up the weekends with news and views on all things motoring.
Yes, indeed, that is true. It is Fender Bender here on Joy 94.9. It's Joy's very own motoring program. My name is Tim Nicholson, and I am very happy to have your company on this lovely Saturday afternoon. I am joined in the studio by the wonderful Mike Costello. Mike, welcome for another go at Fender Bender.
Yay, how you doing, man?
I'm all right, but how are you?
I'm feeling good now.
Yes?
I had the post-travel 15 hours sleep last night trying to get my body back in check after being in Germany for a week.
Germany?
From Germany,
whoops.
Yeah. Well, more like 4 days in Germany, actually, so it was quite a quick turnaround, but feeling better now.
Feeling
quite bright now.
Back onto it. And you were there because?
Of the Frankfurt Motor Show, the ERR Frankfurt Motor Show, which will comprise a lot of what we talk about today.
Very exciting stuff. Some sexy new models, some really exciting concepts, and you got to chat to a bunch of pretty important people, I believe. So
that's the good thing about it. You get to speak to the high up designers and executives and things that you never would otherwise. So it's
terrific.
A good chance to see what's happening in the car industry, not only now, but 10 years down the line as well.
Down the track, yes. Those. Very exciting. We're also going to have a look at light commercial vans and light commercial vehicles. We've got a few listeners who run their own business and have queried what kind of car they should go for. And I guess when you're a small business, you've got to carry stuff around. There's quite a few options out there. So we're going to have a bit of a look at that kind of segment in Australia a little bit later on, and you can find out what's on offer.
That would explain why you're wearing fluoros and a hard hat.
That's true.
Because I was going to ask why you're wearing that to the studio. That makes sense now.
Look, this is my look. It's to attract dudes.
Really?
Okay, yeah.
There's no whistle attached to it, though, which kind of, you know, negates it somehow.
No, I just take the whistle when I go to the Peel and dance on a box.
Okay.
Yeah. It's very different, very different. But we're going to be talking about Frankfurt, as we said, light commercial vehicles and a whole lot more on Fender Bender today. So do stick around. And if you've got any questions, if you want to, if you want to know any more about
anything,
anything at all,
cars or non-car stuff,
yeah,
just
exactly.
Text us and say hi.
Yeah, if you want to know why Geelong didn't win by as much as they should have last night, we can answer that too, because they sucked in the first half. Anyway, we won't go there. It's not a football show. I won't get angry. But do contact us, 0427JOY949 or email on air at joy.org.au. We'd love to hear from you.
Or facebook.com/FenderBenderJoy.
Correct. Or the Twitter. We've got a Twitter as well, twitter.com/FenderBenderJoy. God, FenderBenderJoy's all over the place. We've also got some podcasts up at the moment from the current season. So if you've missed a few shows, head over to joy.org.au/FenderBender and you can find some of the more recent podcasts. And over the coming weeks, we're going to find some older podcasts from the start of the year that I thought were missing. But the lovely Jonathan, who I've just seen walk in, has found them and will be reviving them, which is very exciting. So yes, get on to that. But now, we've got some very important news to start the day with, Mike. His Holiness, Pope Francis, you familiar?
Obviously an extremely important figure in the gay community, no doubt about it.
He's huge. He's huge in the gay community.
I do actually like, if there has to be a Pope, I'm all for this guy. He seems to be less extravagant, perhaps, a bit more grounded.
He's
South American too, so.
Yeah. I think he would be the least worst option as a
the
pope.
Least
Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, let's be honest, his competition wasn't amazing. But good old Pope Francis, very exciting news. He's chosen his Pope-mobile. So traditionally you've had, I think, what's his name? Benedict. He was the German, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He had Mercedes-Benz ML class or, you know,
so we're talking luxury,
yeah.
Very expensive.
High-end.
Not exactly humble machinery.
No, fortified with, you know, bulletproof glass, the whole shebang. Like, they look amazing. Quite ridiculous. Not very aerodynamic, of course, because that's basically a box on wheels. Good old Pope Francis, he has gone for something a little bit more humble. He's gone for a 1984 Renault 4.
And I love this. I mean, he's basically come in and he said, right, the Catholic Church has gone a bit extreme, a bit extravagant. Mm-hmm. The sort of clothes they wear is the sort of thing you'd expect to see 50 Cent or some rapper wearing. It's a bit extravagant, really. And he's gone back to the roots, hasn't he? He's gone back to the humble beginnings. A 84 Renault 4.
Yep. I don't know how that's going to work. I don't think he's going to be able to stand up in that car. You know what I mean?
I had a look at it. We've got a picture on our Facebook page. Go and have a look. It's tiny. How's it going to fit in the back of that thing? I imagine that the starched white Pope dress isn't very flexible.
Well,
so does that affect you, how he gets in and out of this car? I don't understand.
There's so many questions that need to be answered. Also, is it going to have bulletproof glass? I mean, this man, it was 1981. There was the attempt on
You know,
Pope
it
John
sends
Paul.
A message. I mean, if you're the Pope, you're basically saying, I believe there is an afterlife, and as the Pope, I will go to heaven. That's what he's saying. So why it looks bad for a Pope to be afraid.
That's true. That's
he should say, come at me.
Are you saying he is a tough guy?
Totes.
He's the
He was raised
Willis.
On the mean streets of Buenos Aires, my friend. He is a badass Pope.
He is hardcore. So, look, good luck to him. And
I like it. All yeah, for it.
It's very exciting. It's very exciting, I think. Now, something else that's happened this week there, you might get excited about this, Mike. I'm not sure. There is a new monster truck world jumping record.
Really?
Yep. I'm not going to lie to you. I was a little bit excited. The inner bogan in me saw this online today.
There's a bogan in you.
A big one.
Wow.
Yeah. I don't know what his name is. I wish he'd get out because it's hard to talk. Oh, stop it. Stop it. No, look, there's a new monster truck jumping record. This dude called Joe Sylvester jumped. He's got a Dodge Ram it's not a Dodge Ram, let's be honest. It looks like a Dodge Ram, but it's nothing like it. With those enormous wheels. It's somewhere in America, some Hicksville state in America. And he did a jump of, get this, 237 feet and 6 inches.
237 feet. What's that, about 80 metres?
Something like that.
Yeah, that's pretty extreme.
Isn't that crazy?
Did he do it over, what did he leap over?
Nothing. Well, just ground.
You need
yeah.
to have like a pit of lava or something. Make yeah. it interesting. Like a giant roll of TNT that if he hits it, this the whole stadium explodes. Or something like that.
To make it
brings
dangerous.
Some tension to it.
Yeah, like crocodiles in a pond
yeah,
or
like
something.
A Bond movie. But yeah. no doubt, that's a pretty damn impressive
That's amazing.
Feat.
Actually, what he did have in the background was a massive, his truck. Mm-hmm. Like the truck that he's got. And behind it were like little mini fireworks. So it kind of looked all explosion-y, but it's like, no, that's quite a way behind the car and in no real danger of hitting it. So, but look, good on him. I think it's amazing. He broke his own world record, which was the 2010 record of 208 feet. And on a side note, he's really hot. So...
You have a bit of a thing for redneck men, don't you?
A little bit. Well, he's like big and chunky and...
I see.
Yeah,
that explains why yeah. you're talking about monster trucks. Yeah. I must admit I was confused.
Well, I kind of saw the picture on the internet. I'm like, he looks all right. And then he looks like one of those dudes from that Chopper show, you know, when yeah. they pimp out the
okay.
the motorbikes. But good luck to him. Good luck to you, Joe Sylvester. Now, something else this week, Mike. Something a little bit saucy.
Is this what I think it is, Tim?
I think it
We're
might
gonna
be.
We're going to go there? Okay.
I don't know. If we should.
Look, we're all for, at this station, we're all inclusive.
That's true.
Whatever you feel attracted to is fine by us. You know, it's about expressing yourself open and honestly. And I suppose we should really support this man and his mm-hmm. endeavours mm-hmm. if it wasn't so disturbing what he was getting up to.
So this is a chap in Wales, I believe, somewhere in Wales. Mm-hmm. And he got really, 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 really drunk and decided to simulate sex with his Land Rover Discovery.
I think Land Rover should use this guy in their advertising. I do. I think they should bring him out, have an ad, and say Land Rover, the company that inspires so much love in its customers that the customers want to shag their cars.
Well, it's not a bad idea.
I assume he was using the exhaust.
You'd
or was
have
he just
be.
Kind of draping himself over the front?
I don't know the logistics of it. Yeah. Right. But he's been taken to court about it. There must have been public
It's a victimless crime, isn't it? Well. I mean, it might hurt the Juco, but... You can get that fixed.
That's true.
It's a victimless crime.
Well, we've talked about this before, mechanophilia, I
Some
think it's called.
Some people just really love their cars.
Yeah, and it's a thing. But this guy he wasn't really that into the sexy part of it. Apparently, just before that, he had humped the counter at a kebab shop, then humped the floor of the kebab shop, humped something else on the way home, and then humped the Land Rover.
Somebody please go out with this guy.
He's married.
Oh, wow.
I know.
Well, whoever his wife is needs to...
Do
you know,
something.
Just come on, help the guy out. He's obviously got an issue.
Yeah. Well, he's very embarrassed, apparently, but and look, I don't think he has an actual fetish, like a lot of people out there do, as we've discussed on this program before, and good on them, I guess.
We don't have to be nice to everyone. They're weirdos, damn it.
That's true. Damn you. Yeah, so that's the most bizarre thing I've seen this week, quite frankly. Now, very, very briefly, Mike, last weekend was the election. You were lucky because you weren't in the country.
I did vote before I skipped the country, and yep. I said, I'm going to Germany to avoid the first week of Tony Abbott. That's true. But there is a very interesting development for the car industry as a whole, because Sophie Mirabella would have been the minister in charge of the Australian car industry.
Yep.
She would, the wider industry brief would have been hers. She was the opposition spokesman on that. Of course, she's probably going to lose her seat of Indi, and she has withdrawn from the running to be the minister for the Australian car industry. So there will be a big change there. We don't know who's going to take over her spot yet. There's not even any reputed front runners. It's a complete mystery. On Monday, the cabinet will be announced. But Mirabella is a very divisive figure. I suggest a lot of people enjoy probably aren't too fond of Sophie, and I'm one of them.
Yeah.
If you're listening, Sophie, I don't mean that personally. but yeah, she's a very divisive, controversial figure, and she was pledging to strip a lot of money from the car industry. Yeah. It's interesting to see what her predecessor might do, because she won't take the role. And it's a big surprise because nobody saw this coming.
And it's also, as you said before, there's nobody that's a real clear front runner. You wouldn't, you know, there's people you kind of think, oh, for education, Christopher Pyne, he was the shadow minister, that would make sense. But there's no one else that you would think immediately would take this role.
No, and I have no idea who they're going to choose. I mean, there's not really too many words coming out of Canberra about it yet.
Liberals are very good at keeping things under wraps, unlike the Labor Party.
Yes,
but
there is that.
I mean, we'll keep our eye on that, and we'll bring you the news, of course, next week. But it'll be interesting, and as you say, it directly relates to the Australian car industry. So hopefully whoever takes that role makes some smart decisions and keeps us going.
Word.
Word indeed. Now, this is Fender Bender. We've got a lot more coming up. Just around the corner, we're going to be talking about Frankfurt Frankenfurters. I'm very excited. This is Fender Bender. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. It is Joy's very own motoring program, and we are very excited to be chatting with you today. As always, text in 0427-JOY-949 or email onair@joy.org.au. We would love to hear from you if you have any questions or just want to say hi. Now, Mike, of course, you are getting over the jet lag, but you're looking well, you're sounding well. How the hell was Frankfurt?
Well, it's the world's biggest motor show, Tim. So it's enormous. I guess the best way I'll explain it is the entire Australian motor show would fit inside the Volkswagen stand at Frankfurt.
Are you kidding?
That's one brand. All Volkswagen group. So Skoda, SEAT, Audi, VW, that entire group. That stand is the size of the entire Aussie motor show. And then you consider that Frankfurt has all the brands. You can imagine how enormous it is. There's a train running inside it to get you from bit to bit. I made the mistake of wearing... I had to go on Friday to buy a new pair of business shoes because mine are looking a bit sad and tired. And the logical side of me would have bought a pair of comfortable, you know, cushy, nice shoes. I, of course, bought a pair of absurd cowboy boots with buckles on them. So my feet ain't feeling
in
great.
Germany.
My feet ain't feeling great, I won't lie. But... the things we do for style. But it's an amazing show. And of course, being the world's biggest car show, you don't only see the reveal of a lot of exciting concept cars and new cars. I mean, it's the first time in the world anyone really gets to see a lot of metal. But also, all the executives and designers and the bigwigs of all these major companies are available to speak with. And my second day at the show was devoted. I just basically went from stand to stand and asked to speak with various executives of all sorts of companies. And that's a really good way to... I mean, you're talking to the people who decide what this company is going to do moving forward. So it's a really educational experience. And of course, there's the glitz and glamour as well. You've got the show girls and boys walking around, the promo people, and you've got the amazing, exciting concept cars. And there's a real sense of you're at the cutting edge of the industry. You know, it's the jewel in the industry's crown.
On that, show girls and boys, I assume there's a lot more girls than boys.
Yeah, you would assume, right. There are.
Okay.
I think they shipped in every single leggy Russian girl they could find. A lot of them.
Yep.
A lot of showboys as well, though.
That's good.
There were, you know, a few companies got behind that. I mean, Kia, for instance, was seemingly an equal opportunity employer because they had, you know, they had a one of each draping themselves over the cars at all times. So.
I support that.
Whichever way you swung, you were good at Kia.
Yeah.
Unless you were the guy that liked to have sex with cars, in which case security would have probably escorted you out.
Keep him away from the Discovery. Now, speaking of Kia, so I think he's one of the presidents or something now, and head designer, he kind of changed their whole
Peter
look.
Peter Schreier, the world's most famous car designer, one of the few people whose name is synonymous with the company. He's obviously, he designed the Audi TT. He was the president of Audi Design. Kia threw a lot of money at him, poached him. He turned that company around, essentially. Kia have now got a reputation for making interesting, exciting cars. That's largely his doing. He's now the president of Kia and also Hyundai. And so I got he was kind enough to grant us an interview and a sit down. And we talked about, I suppose, why the company does so many concepts, because they do an absolute ton of concepts.
They really do.
And we also talked about, you know, Kia was showing a compact SUV concept. We talked about why it was Kia, not Hyundai, that were doing that, where he's going to take Hyundai moving forwards. And he told me that his dream that he's trying to push through at the moment is a topless roadster.
Ooh!
So his job as a designer is to design cars, and then it's the bean counters that make it happen. But he's telling me that he's pushing as hard as he can to make a topless Kia and Hyundai 80s Toyota 86 rivaling or Mazda MX-5 rivaling type car.
Is there money in that? There must be. I mean,
well, that's the big problem, is volume. Right. You can't make enough.
Yeah.
And a lot of companies are now doing joint ventures with other companies. He seemed to say that probably wouldn't happen. I think it's more about a reputation builder, and that's where the hope lies. Is Hyundai and Kia might see the value in having a car like that to boost the image of the rest of their range.
Yeah.
And they're looking at doing it. So,
well, I guess they're starting to kind of, I think we're getting a couple of turbos from them in the next 6 months to 12 months. That awfully named, what is it? Proceed GT.
Yes.
Is that what it is? Yeah. And then the Kia Coupe's going to be a bit of a sexy model when it comes
out
this year.
It is. And I think they're looking to build from that. So very
good,
exciting.
Yeah. And did you speak to anyone else exciting?
Yes. I mean, I spoke to, there were a lot of lot of really interesting people. I actually ran into the president of Land Rover on the stand. And of course, Jaguar is a part of the Land Rover group. They're the same company. And Jaguar revealed its very own SUV. And I asked him if, at Land Rover, is Jaguar stepping on your toes? Are they cutting your grass, invading on your territory? And he said no, because the Jaguar is not, quote, a tough bastard, unlike the Land Rover. So maybe there's a bit of intercompany rivalry going on there. I don't know.
Well, there must be.
The chief of Volkswagen engineering, the man who made all the platforms, engines, transmissions across the entire Volkswagen Audi group, Ulrich Hackenberg, was kind enough to give us some of his time. And he, you know, had some very interesting things to say on hydrogen power, how they're going to move into hydrogen cars and the future of electric cars. And by 2020, the overall theme of the show was that by 2020, we're going to see a lot of autonomous cars that drive themselves. And we're going to see basically nothing but electric and hydrogen cars.
Yep.
Every car maker worth their salt at that show had something electric.
Yeah.
Bar none. Every single company there had an electric car of some description that will be in production very soon. Mm. And Mercedes and Nissan showed off cars that drive themselves.
Yep.
Mercedes had a car that drove 125 kilometres all on its own.
An S-Class.
So Bertha Benz in the 1880s drove the very first Benz car, 125 kilometres from one place in Germany to another. And they redid that symbolic journey, but the car completely drove itself.
Isn't that crazy?
The two themes coming out of this show were alternative fuels and autonomous cars.
Yeah.
And they're both much more advanced than you might think. You have a look at what they had on display.
Yeah. And I think Volvo are calling it, you know, they want, I think around the same time, they're all saying about 2020, the uncrashable car. It was interesting with the Bertha Benz one, because they were saying in the release that it hadn't, you know, it hadn't gotten rid of all of the quirks of the system, because they'd get to a zebra crossing and somebody, like a pedestrian, would be waving them through and the car just wouldn't go. Because it's like, but there's a person there. What am I going to do?
So. And, you know, that would suck if you're at Chadston Shops or something and you got to use your discretion, because otherwise you're there all day waiting for a million people to clear out.
It's crackers.
I suppose, and what everybody's saying is you should never get to a point where a car can't be overridden by the driver if the driver wants to.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that would be a disaster. But, absolutely. I mean, I guess the sad side of it is do we want to lose control of the car?
Exactly.
You have a look at how terrible some drivers are, and they should definitely be having cars that drive themselves.
Yep.
But then people like you and me who actually love cars, and I'm sure a lot of you people listening out there love just driving for the sake of driving.
Yep.
You never want to lose that either.
Exactly.
And so I really hope, and all the people I spoke to intimated that would be the case, that you'd always have the option.
Yep.
And I hope that they stay true to that.
Control. And let us know, what would you be interested in a driverless car? 0427 Joy 949 or on air at joy.org.au is the email address. It's coming, so we'll have to get used to it, whether we like it or not.
And play tricks on them at zebra crossings. Think of all the fun you can have.
Exactly. Now, Frankfurt, of course, is all about concepts, and this year there was no real disappointments. A huge amount came out this year. Now, as we've talked about before, a lot of it came out in the weeks leading up to it. So were there any surprises at the show itself?
There was only one.
Okay.
Actually, I went to a night, a group night, an Audi group night or Volkswagen group night before the show, one night before the show, and they showed off a concept called a Nanook, which is Inuit for polar bear. Mm. Don't know why they called it that. It is a supercar that you won't scrape on speed bumps because it's a high-riding, jacked-up, diesel V10-powered, Lamborghini-looking type coupe. It's very weird.
Yeah. And it's strange because genuinely no one knew this was happening, right?
It was out of the blue, and Audi were the only ones that did that.
Yeah.
Everybody else, it's quite funny because everyone says, "Well, we want to get our stuff out in the weeks before the show, so that at the insanity of the show, it doesn't get buried, it doesn't get lost in the mire, because every publication is reporting about a million things at once."
Yeah.
But the issue now is because nobody reveals things at the show. Conversely, if you do, you get all the headlines.
Yeah.
So Audi played it quite well.
Very smart.
It's a weird car. It's pointing the direction to the next R8, the next R8 is going to look like. It's also using some of their Le Mans winning technology, so their V10, which has won Le Mans a couple of times. And it's a high-riding type crossover setup that looks like a supercar. I don't quite know. Mr. Hackenberg wasn't too drawn on if they're going to make it. I don't think they would.
Right.
It would be an absurd thing to make.
Just a show-offy kind of thing. And you would expect one of the Germans at the German show to kind of pull something out.
One thing you notice there is the parochialism is huge. I mean, the Germans, the BMW, Mercedes and the Volkswagen group dominate. They're huge. They take up half the stand.
Yeah.
Half the overall setup.
Yeah.
Everybody else is kind of pushed to the side, which is fair enough. It's the German show.
Yeah.
But it was a show of force. It's a giant, penis length contest, for lack
between
of a
the Germans.
Better term,
yep.
Between the Germans, deciding who's the biggest and best,
well,
all trying to outdo each other.
I would suggest, I don't know, I wasn't there, but I Audi seems to have a very lengthy member because they had not one but two. So we knew about the Sports Quattro concept, which is this yellow, I think
it looks
yellow.
Like an American muscle car.
Yeah.
A very cool looking thing, and BMW went on a different tack. They were all about electric cars. Their i8 supercar, plug-in supercar, had its world debut in production form.
Yep.
The i3s were there to drive.
Yeah.
The i3, which is coming to Australia next year, an electric car, a bit like a Nissan Leaf, is an amazing bit of kit. It's beautiful in the flesh. It looks much better than it does in pictures.
Right.
And Volkswagen, of course, were a bit more practical, showing a van version of the Golf. Wasn't particularly exciting, and it's not coming here, so who really cares about that? And Mercedes showed off the S-Class Coupe.
Yeah.
Which is obviously their range-topping luxury grand cruiser.
They're still calling it a concept, I think, aren't they?
But it's basically... Yeah. We'll put a picture up. I've actually put a gallery up on our Fender Bender Facebook. So go and have a look at that and let us know what you think of some of the more interesting cars there. And, of course, the GLA SUV they showed off, Mercedes.
Which is coming out here next year?
Very early next year. It's an A-class-based crossover SUV. And it looks, in the flesh, far better. I mean, in the pictures, I thought it looked a bit fussy, a bit unresolved.
Right.
In the flesh, it looks phenomenal. They're going to sell a boatload.
Yeah.
If you're thinking of buying a BMW X1 at the moment or an Audi Q3, I suggest you just wait until a GLA comes early next year and have a look at that.
Yep.
Because for me, that's the pick of the three.
Hold your damn horses, I say. It's true. Lots more from Frankfurt. What's it called again?
The ERR. Frankfurt Motor Show.
Ah,
yeah.
I nearly said hi. That is Japanese. What's yes, isn't it?
Yeah.
God, thank you. Complicated Germans.
Dankeschön.
This is Fender Bender. We've got lots more coming up just around the corner. This is Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. You are with Tim and Mike, and we are deep in Frankfurt right now. We are very German right now. We are in the middle
of it. I'm wearing my best Lederhosen for this, Tim, so you better appreciate it.
It's true. It's true. You should see it. We should put a picture up, but we won't because then we'll be shown to be liars. Mike has just returned from Germany and has seen a number of amazing things. Also seen some unusual things. There's something, a video that's appeared from the show that's a little bit...
Yes,
not really related
of course,
to cars.
I was hanging with Fender Bender's very own Fian Tor from Car Sales.
Bless his
cotton
socks.
One of the other journalists over there covering proceedings. We were at a reveal of... Well, actually, I wasn't there. He was there. He showed me the video. My memory's all scrambled. Of the Suzuki IV4, which is their next-generation tiny, tiny SUV. It looks fantastic. And I hope the production version looks like that. Knowing Suzuki, it probably won't. But anyway, they chose a very unusual way to reveal a car, which was to drag a very attractive young Japanese model out to the stand in a white canvas type dress, and then another Japanese conceptual artist came out with paint on her hands and proceeded to just rub herself all over the other model, leaving paint behind. I don't quite know the why.
How does that tie into the car?
I don't know. And Suzuki, too. They're a conservative Japanese company. It seems a little unusual. Maybe it was something dreamed up by the executives as a way of making their company seem racier than it is. I don't know. It was certainly one of the stranger sights of the show.
Yeah, I would suggest that it's probably a fantasy of a number of Japanese businessmen, and they just decided to do it publicly.
Look, we've all included paint in our sexual fantasies from time to time. But bringing them to life in front of thousands of foreign media is an unusual move, no doubt about it. And I suppose, in a way, the car looked great. The reveal was very deeply, deeply confusing and troubling on so many levels. Ew. But hey, at least you remembered it. And I suppose they wanted to stand out from the crowd. But that was probably the weirdest thing that I would have seen at the show. There was a bit of oddness going on, although being the chairman's, weirdness isn't really... You know, it's very professional.
Okay.
Perhaps behind closed doors afterwards seems a little bit weird.
Different story. But, in the sex dungeon.
Outwardly, it was quite sensible, by and large.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, I have seen the little Suzuki, and it looks great, and hopefully that'll get here at some point. Possibly as a Jimny, that's the word on the street.
But Jimny, yes.
Yeah, we'll see.
Speaking of our last segment, we just had a message from Ben, who... from South Yarra. Yes, South Yarra. Lovely place. And he said he would love a driverless car, hopefully a car that can park itself as far away as necessary from his destination and then pick him up when he's ready.
See, that's a good
point. Like it has a chauffeur function.
Well, see, and how would that work for drink driving?
Well, it would be amazing because there is a law in Europe anyway that the lawmakers have sort of preemptively put in place saying there has to be a person in the car.
Okay.
They have to be driving it, but they have to be in the car. And I wonder if that would include if you have to be sober or drunk, if you're allowed to...
Yeah.
When they say a person in the car, what do they mean a sober person?
Yeah, exactly.
Or, like you say, you can just go to a drive around the corner from a club, leave your car... dial a number and get your car to come grab you afterwards. Like a chauffeur on call. It'd be amazing.
It's a great idea. I think perhaps it's not appropriate to
do
that.
But I'm sure they'll get there one day. But I share the sentiment, Ben.
Now, a couple of other things from Frankfurt. Not everything was a win, Mike. There was some very strange looking things. I'm just going to put it out there. It looks like a Stormtrooper. It's the Lexus LF NX.
You know, one of the people I spoke with was the Japanese designer.
Oh, wow.
Of that car.
Did you slap him?
He was such a lovely man. He was the nicest fellow in the world. And I did actually have to ask him what was the thinking behind the design of this car. And I suppose their rationale is that they want Lexus to be seen as being exciting and interesting and edgy and all the things that it's currently not perceived as. They might have gone a bit too far. It looks a bit like a Transformer that's kind of had a computer virus kick in 3/4 of the way back to forming a car shape.
Yep.
Because it looks a bit weird and wonky and unusual. I do hope the production version of that car isn't quite so insane.
No.
And it won't be.
Was that the most insane looking thing of the show?
It was probably the most disappointing car of the show for me.
Right.
Just because we've been waiting so long for Lexus to do this sort of car, a small SUV, and they really made a bit of a hash of it. And a lot of modern Lexuses look great. Mm. The LFCC concept they showed in Sydney 2 years ago and some of their other concepts lately have looked amazing.
Yep.
And they've really turned a corner. And then this came out and I mean, yes, it was interesting, but for me and for a lot of other people, it was probably the biggest letdown of the show.
What a shame. And their biggest competitor, I guess, or one of their biggest competitors, Infiniti, showed their Q30 concept, which will come out as a small car in the next couple of years.
Yeah, which is going to be based on the Mercedes A-Class as part of a joint venture they've got going on at the moment.
That looks good.
And it looks great.
Yeah.
Again, you've got to take these show cars with a grain of salt because they obviously take 20% off that for the production version. They lose some of the more cutting-edge things, but you get a good idea of the silhouette of the car, and that looks fantastic.
Yep.
That's what Infiniti needs to thrive in any form in Australia.
Yep.
But overall, most of the cars there, it wasn't as... I suppose in Europe, there's still a sense of the European industry being a bit down, and there wasn't so much optimism in the air. Everyone's saying it's kind of hit its lowest point now and it's only going to go up from here.
Mm-hmm.
But it does mean that the car makers are kind of reining in their spending a little bit.
Yeah.
And you got that feeling that while there was some activity going on, there have been bigger shows in the past.
Yep. That's true. And look, finally, just a couple of models that are basically the production version. As you mentioned before, that beautiful-looking BMW i8, I think, is just divine. But one of the biggest things of the entire show was probably the Nissan X-Trail.
Which, one of the most significant.
Yeah.
Absolutely. look, it's not particularly exciting. It's a Nissan SUV, isn't it? They've gone away from that boxy kind of design that has really symbolized that car from day one. It's always been a real boxy, square, angular design. Mm. It's always been its thing, and they've really gone away from that now. It's very curvaceous and rounded. And
And
I don't know what the rationale there is, why they've done that. I don't quite know. It's a perfectly good car. It'll be one of the better cars available, and they'll sell tons of them, no doubt. But yeah, they've kind of lost that uniqueness, I suppose.
Very. It's kind of lost its edge. And you look at Nissan's design at the moment, the Altima, which is their sedan that's coming out here, looks like a blown-up Pulsar sedan a bit. And this new X-Trail, to me, looks like the new Pathfinder shrunk a little bit.
Yeah.
And I'm really disappointed. It's not a bad design. You look at it and go, oh, yeah, it looks nice, but it doesn't look like an X-Trail. And
no.
I think they'll gain a lot of new buyers, but I think they'll lose a lot of traditional X-Trail buyers who buy it because of that shape.
I think so.
So I'm a bit sad that they've gone in that direction. I'm not going to cry.
And okay. I think the design plays it too safe.
Yes.
One of the interesting things that Peter Schreier, we had a discussion, a broad-ranging discussion, but perhaps the most interesting thing I took away was he praised Chris Bangle. Now, Chris Bangle is the man who he was a BMW designer in the early 2000s, the previous generation 7 Series, that strangely boxy 5 Series with the very distinctive boot line that everybody panned at the time.
Yeah.
And BMW, they said, was going downhill. Its designs were awful in the early 2000s. No one quite knew where they were going. Mm. But since then, a lot of companies have copied that design. And what Schreier was saying is that you need those designers who take massive risks and polarize, but then in the future, eventually it starts to filter down and you need them to come along. And so perhaps maybe we're being too harsh on Lexus, and perhaps maybe Nissan could have learned a bit from Lexus and gone a bit more outlandish. Who knows? Mm. But I suppose when you look at an X-Trail, you think it doesn't really move the game forward in any way. It's just a bit...
It's a bit whatevs.
Also ran.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Good luck to them. Whatevs.
Yeah, whatevs.
Exactly. But a big week for you and a fantastic show, it sounds like.
Absolutely.
Absolution. And I think that the show's still on, of course, but all the media, it's all out there now. There's nothing, we're not going to see anything new in the next week or so, are we?
Nine.
It's pretty much done. Nine, exactly right. This is Fender Bender on Joy 94.9, and we are here to help. Yeah, we're like Kevin. We're here to help, basically, and we want to help people buy cars.
Kevin's not helping too many people right now.
He's probably not, is he? Is he even helping the Labor Party anymore?
No, get the hell out, Kevin.
Ta-da,
Kevin. You had your time, Kevin.
Yep.
Go away.
Yep, that's it. It's Elbow or the other one's turn, Bill Shorten's turn. But no, we do like to help people, and a lot of people text in or email in or just harass us on the street, basically, to ask what kind of car they should buy. And not one, not two, but three people in the last week have asked what kind of small, light commercial vehicle they should buy. A bunch of people I know who are in businesses. Two of them are gardeners. Amazing. And the other one a yoga instructor, but I'm still working out what exactly she needs to carry in that car. But all of these people looking for some kind of light commercial vehicle.
I can't imagine the yoga instructor is going to challenge the car's payload with a ton of yoga mats. Yoga mats are quite light.
I must ask her, actually, why she needs so much space.
Hmm.
Yeah.
What else are you carrying?
Well, that's it. What toys is she using? I will say that she looks incredibly fit these days, so good on you, Lily, if you're listening. But a lot of people are interested in these kind of smaller vans, so not like a big Hiace, rather, anything like that. You know those little ones like a Volkswagen Caddy and those kind of things?
Well, they're all a rage in Europe.
Mm.
They're everywhere in Europe, and not many of them come over here. The Holden Combo used to be the default. It's discontinued now.
Okay.
There is a new one in Europe called an Opel or a Vauxhall. Yeah. Of course, Opel doesn't exist here anymore, so no can do.
Well, that could open that potentially. Who knows?
Who knows?
That would come here as the Holden badges.
I mean, in Australia, if you're looking for a small van, you've got the Volkswagen Caddy, you've got the Citroen Berlingo, the Renault Kangoo. Almost Kangaroo, which is sort of the parochial choice in a way for that reason.
Pretty cute.
It's quite a small market. You don't have a great deal going on there.
Pug's got another little one, the partner, and I'm assuming it's Peugeot and the Berlingo are probably the same.
Citroën has the Berlingo and Peugeot has their version.
And I think in Europe, Fiat offers something that's all the
Doblo,
and that's part of that family.
It's being looked at for Australians.
Okay.
Well. But if you're looking for a small van here, honestly, they don't sell in any great number here, and there's not too many of them available. The Volkswagen Caddy is the most popular.
Yeah.
If you are comfortable buying a Volkswagen... a lot of people aren't now because of the issues that they've had. And it's not for me. I mean, without too much evidence on the table, it's not for us to say one way or another. But it is a good solid car. And the Kangoo is good as well. Mercedes are also bringing one, but that's just a tarted up Renault Kangoo. Because Mercedes and Daimler and Renault and Nissan have that alliance going on, and that's one of the things coming out of it.
Yeah. And look, I had a quick look online. You're looking at around 25K drive away from the Peugeot partner, for example. I did have a look at some second-hand ones, and there are ranging the Volkswagen anywhere from 13 grand to 30 grand second-hand, depending on the year, obviously.
Yeah. This is quite recent. You need to consider cost of ownership. Now, the Renault Kangoo is the cheapest to own because they have 5-year warranty. They have cap price servicing. They have cheaper parts because they use Nissan's parts network. In terms of cost of ownership, my admittedly not particularly deep research would indicate to me that Renault would be the cheapest to own and run, which is a very important thing for a van driver.
Absolutely.
Renault have put a lot of focus on vans compared to what they used to do. And so I suggest that would be worth looking at. And then in the Caddy, I think, would be the two.
It's interesting as well because a lot of people look for smaller businesses like this. Again, you don't need something really big. A lot of people look at like a small wagon or something like that.
And that's strange because that's yet another segment in Australia that's very small, but in Europe it's all the rage. I mean, here you've got the Golf wagon, you had the Opel Astra wagon, which is gone now.
You could probably get a bargain actually.
You could
at the moment.
The Hyundai i30 wagon and the Holden Cruise wagon. But a lot of the small cars in Europe, you've got Focus wagons and you've got, you know, Kia Seed wagons, and you got every car maker worth its salt has a wagon, and here it's a lot more limited. The Hyundai R30 wagon, for me, again, would be the most sensible car to buy for a business because they've got long warranties, they're cheap to run, they're very reliable, and they're cheap to buy.
I think they look great. I know I've said this a lot on this show.
Thing.
I'm obsessed with a small wagon. I think the Cruise looks all right, but I think that i30 is terrific. And I would probably endorse that kind of thing as well. Of course, you've got your second-hand things, like a second-hand ute, but if you're looking at something like a Hilux, they can actually be quite expensive. The resale on those things is brilliant. So it's great if you're selling one, but it's not so great if you want to buy one.
I don't know. Hiluxes are popular because mine sites have deals with Toyota. They're not popular because they're the best ute. They're reliable and they will never break. But in terms of, I mean, is your friend, your gardener friend, looking for a full size?
One of the gardeners I know is looking for a ute. Yes, the lovely Marcus is hoping for something of a ute.
A dual cab.
I don't think he needs that much space. So even a smaller one, possibly an older Commodore ute or something like that, because there's those kind of options as well. It doesn't have to be some.
Well, you get an amazing deal on a Falcon ute at the moment because Ford aren't selling any. You get an amazing deal on a Falcon or a Commodore ute.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, the Ford Ranger is another good option.
Yeah.
And that's a really good car.
That's getting quite expensive. I guess the second-hand ones, again, like the Hilux, can get expensive as they are. But you've also got to be careful, I think, and people who are in the market for something like this, if this is a second-hand car, chances are it's, well, look, I don't want to say too much, but it could have been thrashed. If it's a tradie car, I don't want to cast nasturtions.
If you're buying a car for a business, it's a tax write-off. You buy it new. You get a better warranty. You get cheaper. You buy parts from new. You'd be fine.
Yeah.
But
if you don't have that much money, though, you'd kind of forced to look in that.
But a 4x2 is quite cheap.
Yeah.
But a lot of people, rather than getting a used car, that's where companies like Great Wall are very successful.
Yeah.
People say, I could buy a 5-year-old ute or a brand new one. I'd say buy the used one.
Yeah, right.
Myself.
Yep. And I guess it's the same as looking for any other kind of second-hand car. You've got to be careful as far, you know, you don't want too many Ks on it. And if you're really interested in this car, then perhaps get one of those RACV checks if it's a second-hand car. You want a second opinion if you're not sure of it yourself.
Absolutely. So. But all the utes are generally Japanese companies made in Thailand.
Yeah.
And they're all extremely reliable. I mean, the Mitsubishi Triton is an absolute bargain. You can get them for almost nothing now because it's quite an old design.
That's true.
Worth looking at if you're on a budget as well.
Would you go for a diesel?
Well, you'd be hard-pressed to get a petrol these days.
Okay.
In terms of a traditional utilitarian, they're all diesel.
Yep.
And do that.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Do it!
Now, we've had a couple of messages. One from Charles saying, Renault Kangoo make great taxis. Seats 4 have space for baggage all over South America. Bring them here. Well, they do offer a van version of the Kangoo here in Australia already. They don't have a passenger version, however, and they don't plan to bring one because nobody in Australia buys them. Ooh. It's a demand thing. The market's very small. But you're dead right, Charles. They're a good car. And Alex has asked, did I see the Audi A3 sedan? Very keen from what he's seen. I have seen the A3 sedan. And and it's a good car. It looks, in my opinion, looks better than the hatch.
Yep.
It's the first ever A3 sedan Audi's ever made.
Mm.
Made for China, principally because the Chinese love sedans.
Yeah.
And it's such a huge market. They're bringing it here soon, and there'll be an S3 version as well. It looks great.
It looks... I'm with you. I think it poos all over the hatch. I think the hatch is a handsome little car.
Hatch
but I think
is kind of dull.
Well, yeah.
You've got to remember with the Audi A3s, it's really just a Volkswagen Golf in a fancy outfit.
Yep.
But the sedan is different because there is no sedan Golf.
Yeah.
So it's a different proposition altogether. Yeah. The other one to look for, Alex, is the Mercedes CLA.
Mm.
I don't want to be sounding like I'm always recommending Mercedes, but the company
they're
is
just making good
the company
stuff
is
moment.
Really kicking goals at the moment. They're doing great things, and the CLA is an A-class sedan. To all intents and purposes. And it's a similar price to the, or will be when it comes here, a similar price to the A3 sedan. Yeah. And that's also pretty damn fantastic. So you can't go wrong with either of those two things.
Are we going to see... BMW don't have a tiny sedan.
They don't. And they're pushing into that. BMW is going front drive. Mm. They're going to have some front drive small cars coming very, very soon. But we don't quite know what they're going to be yet.
Yeah.
And they're a while away. They're still a year or two away.
And getting back to the Audi, I was having a chat with the head of Audi Australia, who name escapes me right now, which is terrible, but he was lovely.
Mr. Andrew Doyle.
That's the one. And they are expecting big things out of the A3 sedan in Australia. I don't think they'll expect it to be quite as big as the hatch, but they're really excited about it. And look, I think it's a stunner, and check it out. Check it out. This is...
useful consumer advice. We do it every now and then.
Every now and then. Sometimes we can help people. Rarely, but sometimes. This is Tim and Mike on Fender Bender. Stick around. You are listening to Fender Bender on Joy 94.9. Tim and Mike here with you just for a few more minutes. It's nearly time to say goodbye. But before then, Mike, you've had the opportunity to get behind the wheel of something that could be quite a popular little model in this market.
Yes, and a very, I suggest a car that a lot of our listeners will be quite keen to check out.
Ooh.
Not to draw stereotypes or illusions. The Renault Clio is back in earnest in Australia. Of course, for a long time, Renault have offered the little hot version of the Clio Sport, three-door manual hot hatch. But they haven't had anything else beyond that. And of course, in Europe, the Clio is a mainstream small car. It's a bit like a Fiesta or a Polo. It's in that level. And Renault has... brought it back to Australia, the new generation.
Thank God.
And it's designed by a man named Laurent van den Akker, who is a Dutch designer who was the head of design for Mazda. They've poached him, and this is the first thing that he's ever designed. It looks fantastic.
Mm.
It's very curvaceous, very smooth. It's a five-door only affair. There is no three-door option anymore.
Oh.
But they've hidden the door handle. They've hidden the door handles in the C-pillar, a bit like an Alpha 147 of the past. We'll put a picture up on our social media in a bit for you to have a look at. But it's probably the most distinctive-looking light car on the road. I walked around with a picture of the car shortly before I went on the launch drive program, and I asked people who aren't necessarily car tragics like you and I, how much do you think this car costs?
Yep.
And all of them said $30,000 or more. And in reality, it starts at $16,000. It's a Ford Fiesta rivaling type light car.
Mm.
So in terms of style, it's got it going on. Mm. It's French, so it's got that kind of, I guess, unusual, unique edge to it. That's why people buy French cars, is they want to be seen to be in something a little different, a little out of the ordinary, a little bit of a... So it's got that going on for it as well.
Yeah.
But what's different about the Clio that perhaps Renaults of the past haven't had is it's got a lot of substance to match the style, because it's built from the ground up to accommodate a very powerful turbo engine in the hot version.
Yep.
So in terms of its chassis, it's very composed. Its suspension is fantastic. It rides better than most. Its NVH levels, noise, vibration and harshness, are also very, very well controlled. So it's quiet. It feels like a bigger car on the road. And it's really well equipped and good value. So as an overall package, I mean, and it wasn't just me walking away, but I mean, all my colleagues and other publications were giving this car four and a half stars.
Wow.
I was one of them. Priced from $16,000 to about $23,000. It's not perfect in every way. As typical with Europeans, only one engine is available with an automatic. And a lot of people are, I personally am all for that, but a lot of people like autos. There aren't many to choose from.
Yeah.
There is an auto higher up the range, which is good for a lot of people. It's not perfect, but for a light car, it's in that top couple. I mean, you've got the Ford Fiesta is probably the best.
Mm-hmm.
The Volkswagen Polo is an excellent light car.
Yep.
The Clio is right up there with the best of them. And it's really nice to see Renault, who has struggled for about 10 years now to really have any relevance aside from their hot cars, the RS versions. Well, now they've got a regular base everyman car that's actually really, really good.
And I think that's what's really interesting about this car, apart from the car itself, is that what it's going to do for that brand in this country in particular.
It'll be their top-selling car.
It is a stunning-looking thing, I think.
It really is. It looks great. And I think a lot of people will buy it on that alone. Yep. They'll see that and they'll say, well, I could have that or I could have a Volkswagen Polo. And the Clio wins hands down. Yeah. It's a Prada bag of cars. It looks it looks phenomenal. That'll get people. But then it's good to know that behind that, it's actually really cheap.
Yep.
It's really cheap to run, more importantly. That long warranty comes into play again.
Yep.
5-year warranty, unlimited kilometres, cap price servicing. Mm. So it's a really cheap thing to own. It's really well equipped. Mm. It goes okay. It's actually, I mean, I would be very comfortable recommending it to anybody in the market for a stylish light car.
Awesome.
And kudos to Renault, because there's not many Renaults that I've ever thought that way about.
Yep.
Ever, frankly. Yeah, so, I mean, it's a hell of a big step up for that company.
They're really turning a corner. Yeah. And that design that we're seeing on that, we've just seen at Frankfurt that they've just shown a slightly updated version of the Megane. It's basically the same vehicle with a bit of a new face.
Gets that new schnoz, the new stylish design, and they're going to port that across all their cars.
As they should.
And it looks great.
Yep.
And Renault.
It wins on the Megane, because I've always thought the Megane was a bit of a strange design, but it's really, really winning. And they're obviously going for, I'm not sure if you've seen the ads for the Clio yet on television.
Yes.
They're going for the youth kind of thing, like you don't, but it's something along the lines of
you want some joie de vivre, come by the French small car,
And it's, you know, if you it's really, really stylish, so you don't have to be, and it's models kind of being all goofy and zany. So I mean, they know their target market and they're going to do really well with this, so good luck to them. I think it's very exciting.
We've had a message, Dyer from East Brunswick has asked for our thoughts on the Suzuki APV. This is going back to the light vans that we were talking about, and the Suzuki APV is one of the staples of this market. They've been there forever. You might remember that in the 80s and 90s, they had those very narrow, very small vans.
Yeah.
They've got a more modern version of it. Now, it's been around a while. It is getting on in years, that car.
Yeah.
It's quite a simple design. It's quite a utilitarian design. And it's a bit, I suppose, not as refined as a lot of the modern, more modern light vans are. But being a Suzuki, it will never break down.
Yeah.
Ever.
Yep.
It will go forever.
Yep.
But in terms of things such as safety performance and in terms of NVH, in terms of driving refinement, it is lagging behind because it is getting on in years, the design. It'll be hassle-free ownership, but perhaps wouldn't be my first choice.
No. Having a quick look just online now at reviews of the car, people are quite happy with it. But I'm with you, safety-wise and that kind of thing, I'd be a bit sceptical.
Yeah, look, it's a cheap van that will never break.
Yeah.
And in that sense, if that's what you want, it's fine.
Yep.
It has a few rough edges that perhaps some of the competition doesn't.
Yeah.
But then again, it is a fair bit cheaper than a Volkswagen Caddy or a Renault Kangoo. So in that sense, that or a used Caddy or used Kangoo, it'd be a tight decision. And if you can get a good deal from a Suzuki dealer, and they don't sell too many APVs, you'd probably get a really good deal. Go and negotiate and see if you can get a few grand off it.
Yep.
You probably would. And then it might be worth looking at.
And these buyers seem to be quite happy. And it's just about what you want. It's your own personal requirements. So have a look at a few things is probably our recommendation. Shop around, guys. And on that note, it's time to say ta-da. Thank you very much, Mike Costello, for another week of Fender Bending.
It's been good. It's been unusual having just two of us. We've been missing the third leg.
What's his name again?
Well, you spoke about two gardeners today. We're missing a gardener.
That's true. Dan.
Daniel.
God bless you, Dan. We'll see you again
wherever
soon,
you are, Dan. He's got his head in the bonnet of a car, as per usual, no doubt.
I think so. That's very true. So that's it from us. We will, of course, be back next week. Thank you very much for listening. Thanks for everyone for texting in. And, of course, thanks to Anthony on the phones. My name's Tim Nicholson, signing off for another week. Safe driving.
Catch.
This has been a Fender Bender podcast for Joy 94.9, Australia's first and only gay and lesbian radio station. See joy.org.au for more details.
This podcast was produced by Joy Media. You can support Joy's diverse sound and diverse community this June by donating to Joy Radiothon 2024. Go to joy.org.au/radiothon. And remember, we all flourish with joy.